Welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use jobs. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your host, it's Mark and Jamie.
So hello and welcome to the Carpcast 11. That's right, isn't it, Mark? I can count.
It is 11. Yes, you've run out of fingers. You're down to your toes.
Yeah, we are. I've just got my little pinky on my left toe. If we get to my little pinky on the right toe, we're doing well.
We will, I'm sure. We'll start on mine then.
Addressing the quick issue from last week, we had a nice email from a guy earlier who didn't like us slating the hashtags in the Carpar Not Sheep. A very friendly email saying how much he likes the show, and then said but he didn't like us putting down hashtags of 16 pounders because he can only fish for small fish, which brings me on to my fishing this week, because we are certainly not sizist when it comes to fish. I was out myself fishing on a lake that doesn't hold anything bigger than maybe, well, we were told to go up to 18 in there, and then the son of the owner of the lake then told us they'd taken all the doubles out to put in the other lakes. Didn't tell us after until we paid our 24 quid for the night. They had stocked it with 400 or 500 absolutely stunningly beautiful kind of I don't know what you'd call them, but they were just really pretty mirrors that are like £4. I had the biggest fish out of all of us, which I reckon scraped in at a whopping £7, something like that.
Is that a hashtag £7?
It will be £7, hashtag singles for the win, hashtag £24, hashtag pasties, hashtag coming back next week. It's the only fish I've caught this year. they will be my hashtags after it. But I enjoyed it. We went on that lake because we went with Spenny, who's one of the partners of the fishing show, and Reedy, who's the other partner in the fishing show. And we had kids with us. So pal Dave came down with his two little ones. So Dave caught the first fish. It was really slow in the daytime, actually. It was quite interesting. When we set up there, it was a warm day. I burnt my head and still have the blisters. Not as big a blisters as we're going to talk about shortly, more on that later, but just extremely painful blisters on my head. It's just started peeling today, but it's been really sore. Do not go in any sort of sun with a bald head and no cream. It's not a good idea. But yeah, it was pretty slow in the daytime, and then as soon as the light started dropping in the evening, Dave had one. He had to go because he wasn't staying the night, because he had like a 1-year-old with him. But I was there with Reedy and Spenny and the little one, and we hauled. We had quite a few fish. I reeled in at sort of 11 o'clock at night. We were catching bream to about 5-6 pound and small carp. And then I reeled in, putting rods out in the morning, had a 2 or 3 straight away. Once the light was fully up, like 10, 11 a.m., it slowed up again. And we ended up putting a method feeder out, like a carp method feeder. I forget who makes them now, but they sold them in the shop there. So we were just making like those little rubbery Nash pellets. I forget what they're called now, you know, for the ball maker things that they do. Just getting them, putting water on them. They got really rubbery. Sticking them to the back of the method feeder with 2 bits of corn. And boy, it was going every 10 minutes. Now, the interesting thing, we were catching the same fish, you know, same them sort of 4 or 5 pounders, the stocky mirrors. We were catching them on the normal carp gear at night, but in the daytime, the only way we could get a bite was on this, you know, using a method feeder, corn, obviously, you know, like a sort of kind of 8-pound nylon hook link. And we were getting screamers like every 15 minutes, yet the normal carp gear was not catching them in the daytime. Which says to me, the carp are catchable at all times, just on different methods. I don't know what you think about that.
I totally agree with you. I mean, obviously, I work in a tackle shop now with a matchman. My former neighbour is quite an accomplished matchman, and we've had many a chats over the fence, and, well, quite literally learning over it. And I've got to say, this is a general thing here. I think carp anglers can learn a hell of a lot more than matchstick anglers can learn from us. We can learn a lot from them.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, these were the same fish, but I was only catching those fish at night. With the daytime light levels, and you'd say they weren't feeding hard, but I mean, we caught just as many in the day once we changed tactics, and we only had two rods out, and those two rods in the space of 2 or 3 hours before we packed up caught more than all of us put together, you know, with like nine rods out through the rest of the time. I don't know what it was, maybe it was the kind of lighter tactics. But they were ravenous. We were catching consistently. It's still going waves, you know, like it does when you're fishing well-stocked lakes. You get a wave of like 4 or 5 bites, and it'd go quiet for 40 minutes or an hour, and then it'd start up again. I've always found that in fishing entire life.
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to disturbance. I mean, you watch some of these matchmen. I mean, I live also, we're walking distance from Hayfield Lakes as well, and they've got a lovely pub there. But you watch them fishing the method feed at, they're casting every 30 seconds, whether they've got a fish or not. And I'm sure it's that splosh, that disturbance.
Yeah, we were giving it probably too long, actually. If it went quiet for like 20 minutes, we were casting and quite, you know, redoing it and quite often getting a bite straight away. There is a lot to be said for that.
Yeah, and also on the sound thing, there's another method that the pole lads use called slapping.
Oh, yeah, I've heard. They slap the water, don't they, with the...
Yeah, it's pretty much what they is. They'll just basically, this is my understanding of it from only talking about it in a shop and listening to conversations. It's basically just slapping your rig down. And there's also floats designed to sound like pellets when they land.
Wow. Years ago, like, to get a bite of float fishing stuff, you'd tweak the float, wouldn't you? You'd deliberately move it to try and create that situation to make, you know, fish grab it. I mean, I spoke about this on the podcast before, but when I was fishing the Manchester Park Lake and the ducks were feeding on the spot at the same time as the carp, I'm sure that the ducks triggered the carp into feeding. They created that little bit of competition. That, you know, it's like if you're playing games with a cat, you know, and you're dangling, you know, something on a bit of string in front of it, and you pull it away every time. It makes the cat go skits even more. And, you know, it was that tactic with the float fishing. Like, you'd keep like pulling the float under and stuff, just to try and trigger that bite. And I'm wondering if just recasting the method sort of really regular does the same kind of thing. You know, you need to excite the fish. You turn them on, don't you?
Yeah, they need stimulation. You don't need, it's a feeding situation. If you can create competition, then you've got it made.
Yeah, and I've always done best on lakes when. You know, I use that competition. I try and get the small fish. I try and get the spot active with everything on it. You know, roach, you name it, whatever was in there, I wanted them feeding on that spot. With, you know, hemp, corn, maggots, whatever you can get in that spot mix, there's more in. Because I think if you've got an active spot, the carp are more likely to trigger that feeding sense inside them when they come across. But we're getting all technical right on the introduction.
Yeah, I know. Well, we've both been fishing. We've both had a bit of success. It fires you up. It gets the cogs back going.
I had to go and fish a runs water with full of 4 pounders to catch my first fish of the year. But even that gives you confidence. And I've learned something. You know, I mean, going back to the email that the chap sent us, you know, I certainly don't knock any types of fishing because, A, you're always learning. B, you're always having fun, you know, I had a great day's fishing doing that. I had so much so it's made me want to go fishing again. I'm turning down a weekend's poker when I've had an outrageous week at the poker online. There's a new Micro Millions series started, and I'm going fishing for 3 days because I got the bug after last week.
Yeah, I remember a few years back you lost the bug, did whatever you did through the summer, and like two sessions back you had a 58 pounder.
That is true.
Is that going to happen again?
You've got a fish a lake that's got a 58 pounder in it to catch one. I haven't got a syndicate this year, so there will be a French trip before the end of the year, that is for sure. And I'm not sure when, but probably back end of the summer. And I'm going to do a few more day ticket sessions, but choose the lakes a bit more carefully, I think, now. And I'm from just enjoying going fishing, I'm now kind of going going fishing to, I want to catch fish when I go now, whereas earlier in the year, you know, I wasn't bothered if I caught or not, I just wanted to sling the rods out and relax. And now I want to catch.
Yeah, let's be honest, earlier in the year you'd had the show, all the madness that goes with organising that, and I think you just wanted to relax.
Yeah, definitely. And as we've spoke before, I did quite a long interview actually. Carp Talk are doing an anniversary issue which will be out the Tuesday after you hear this show. Show comes out on Friday, I think it comes out on Tuesday, but I've done an in-depth interview in that mag. One of the chaps contacted me and Paddy Webb rang up the other day and basically answered a load of questions, sent him a load of pictures, and it's quite a bit of talk about what we spoke about on the podcast with the fact that of not having a purpose, you know, like a target or a target lake as opposed to a target fish. Not having a syndicate has kind of took away that competitive edge that I've naturally got to go out and really hunt them. But it looks like being a good issue. I've not read Carp Talk for a little while. But it's always good, you know, you always make sure you get the Christmas bumper one, don't you? And I think this is a special edition bumper one as well, out next week. If Carp Talk want to send us any money, then we are taking advertising now. So. Talking of which, we're going to hit just shy of 10,000 downloads this month. After this episode comes out, we cleared 5,000 last month.
We smashed 5,000.
Yeah, and we've already at 5,000 off the Jules episode. So we're going to hit 10,000 by the time this one comes out, before the end of the month for sure. It's time to monetize it. I spoke to somebody about having some hoodies and t-shirts done today. Callum, who designed our logo and stuff, he also makes hoodies and stuff for his own brand. I've got him on the case, so we should have some merchandise at some point, and we're going to be selling advertising. I think once we go weekly, once we start getting advertising in, we can make this show a weekly show, so you can get your daily dose of us whinging about the fishing industry. And
if you call Ting Tong, well, whatever he wants to do with it, it's his own business.
But I reckon we'll hit 20,000 with four episodes a month. I reckon we'll hit 20,000 downloads a month, which is going to be way cheaper to advertise on than any other medium where you get 20,000 views or listens of your product. We're going to be super cheap compared to other mediums with the same reach. So by all means, contact us. It's going to be a lot cheaper than you think. We've worked out a little plan. So that's our whoring ourselves out. Oh, we might as well whore ourselves to Amazon as well. We have an Amazon link under every podcast. If you buy anything off Amazon, then please just click our link first and then shop. We get a tiny little kickback.
And it costs you nothing more than it would anyway, so it just helps us. And thank you.
I spent 80 quid with Amazon yesterday, actually. I didn't even know, which was a bit annoying. I ordered some stuff off, you know, Joe Rogan's On It website.
Yeah.
I ordered some brain tablets and stuff for the poker. And when I looked at the bill today, I think it was like $99 with delivery. It was 70 quid or something, 75 quid. And when I looked at the delivery note, the invoice that came through today, it was from Amazon Prime. I'm like, bugger. I'd better know, and I could order it direct through Amazon. I'd have used our link and got 11 pence back.
I think the next time I get a fill of the that American line that I use, it will be through the US Amazon, because it's about the only place to get hold of the damn stuff.
I didn't know you could get it off Amazon. I need some of that line. Actually, we're talking about in the UK, they were calling it Extrusion by P Line. I think it's the best multi-purpose line I've ever used. You know, like an all-round line you can use for general fishing, like casting, strength, abrasion resistance. It's just the perfect balance, I think, for carp angling. General carp angling, if you're fishing a super snaggy lake and you want tow rope but you're not casting far, there's thicker lines. If you're out and out, got a chuck to the horizon, you know, 150 yards, then you want a chucking line with a leader. This one, if you want to fish comfortably 130 yards and have a strong line, supple, thin, everything, like, this is the line, isn't it? I've never found anything better.
No, it was me who introduced you to it a while back, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah, it's the perfect line.
Yeah, I'll just give my appraisal of it, because there is pros and cons. Pro, its stretch is as low as you'd ever get a mono, which is what I really, really want.
It's 6% stretch, which means for every 100 yards, there's 6 yards of stretch in it. Most lines are 10 to 12%, and some are worse.
Some are a lot worse.
So you like this 50% less stretch, basically, at 100 yards, which is big. It helps with, you can donk around the lead with it. You know, you can actually feel the bottom. Not quite as good as braid, but it's not far off. You know, it's good enough for putting a lead on and leading around.
Yeah, that's exactly what I do with it. And the diameter as well. I mean, I've got 17 pounds on my reel, and it's 0.30.
Yeah, which is great, and it's a true rating.
And I was actually, this is in my garage, I was showing my mate Dan some the other day, and he was asking about the abrasion resistance because of the low diameter, and I actually got a spool that I've still got left, with a bit left on it, you know, the old original Nash bullet?
Yeah.
And that's mega abrasion resistant. I'm scraping them both against the bricks on my garage. They both broke at the same time.
Well, yeah, and that the original Nash bullet was, again, one of the toughest lines on the market.
Yeah. If that hadn't been removed, I would never have found P-line. I'd have just carried on with it.
Yeah, the trouble with P-line now is it's very hard to get hold of. They call it something different in America, don't they?
It's evolution in America and extrusion in Europe. Licensing issue, I think.
It's the colour as well. I think we spoke about it before on the podcast, but I did one of them underwater dives with Rob Hughes, and when he came back, he was like, what line is that? Of all the people that he's done the same demo with underwater, he said I've never seen line like that. I couldn't see it under the water. He had to keep looking for it coming up, you know, looking at the bank, looking where the line should be. He couldn't see it. It was virtually invisible. I'm not sure if invisible line is what you want. We spoke about this before, haven't we, about fish spooking off things that they can't see, or things that they know are there and they just swim round. That is an argument we spoke about in episode 1, probably, wasn't it, when we talked about the pink line and stuff. And some people using like bright orange and bright yellow.
That seems so long ago now.
Episode 1, yeah. So, you know, I'm not sure if you want invisible line, but it's just got a really nice charcoal grey colour, and it is virtually invisible in the water.
Yeah. We'll talk about my fishing I've been doing, because the swim that I have had 3 out of it, a bit of success, but it's a bit of a mission to get to the spot where I was catching from. The mission being, casting about, I don't know, 110, 120 into some shallow water, walking all the way around through the woods out onto the shallows. I mean, I didn't bother with chesties because it's nice and warm. I just go in my shorts. And finding the lead, clipping a rig on and walking it another further 20, 30 metres to the spot, then just chucking it in a line of bait and then moving back. But I'm finding the line by finding it with my feet. You know, you can't see it.
Yeah.
I put it down to, I didn't really think of it that way, but now you mention it, I'm thinking, yeah, I'm walking around and I'm first thing I know I'm on my line is when I feel it.
Yeah, Rob couldn't find it under the water while he was diving. Like, he had to keep going back or holding it on the way out there to the spot.
You've not told me that one before. I'm quite happy with that.
Yeah, I thought I'd mentioned it on one of the podcasts before. As soon as he got back to the bank, he was like, what is that line? I've never seen... you know, he'd never heard of that one before, because it's not many people use it.
No, I think the first time I saw it was Sean Harrison.
That's right, yeah.
I'd seen it on his Facebook, and well, after the original bullet was discontinued, I tried one line that I probably shouldn't mention. It's the stretch, and it was like fishing with a rubber band. I used it one session, it was off. I used another line, which is good if you're not going to cast past 10 yards. That lasted one session, and it was going to be expensive, so I decided to spend even more money, got the P-line, and that was a good few years back. I've not looked back since.
Yeah, the thing is wood line, a lot of people don't realise it's a physical impossibility to have a line that does everything, because of the laws of physics. You know, if you want a tough line, it has to be thicker. Thicker lines don't cast as well. If you want a really thin line, they're quite often stretchy. We don't want stretch in our line. You know, if you want a braid I've always looked for the perfect braid because I think that's the ultimate line, is braid. But if you want a casting braid, it floats. If you know, if you want a sinking braid, it casts like dog shit because, you know, as soon as it gets wet, it gets heavy. There is always
a lot of places ban braid.
Yeah, and that. There's always a compromise to be made, like, depending on your requirements of it. If like, X-Line, that £20 X-Line, which casts, you know, 70, 80 yards, you can maybe get it 100 if you're really winding it up, but it's not a pleasurable 100 yards, you know. But if I'm fishing somewhere like the Essex Manor, which a lot of the guys on there do use that £20 X-Line, it's deep, you never cast in more than 30, 40 yards, and it sinks like a brick. I'd be using that on there because, you know, it's pretty tough in the £20. It's dead thick and it just sinks like a brick. So, you know, you've got it clued up fish, big fish, and it's just laying on the bottom. But, you know, if you're regularly chucking 70, 80 yards, or you need to be able to bang 100 yards if you see a fish show, then you don't want X-Line on your reels. It's, you know, it's a compromise depending on the lake that you're fishing, but for most people's fishing, they want one that's not going to break too easy, that's not stretchy, because you want to lead around, you know, rather than having to use a marker, you can lead around, find a spot, clip it up and bang it out to it and know that it's accurate. You don't want stretching the line to do that, and you need one that casts well, that will, you know, that's got a good strength to diameter ratio, which is the key. It's you know, that's the difference.
And the other one you've not mentioned is sinking, or the P line. It's pretty neutral. I use it for surface fishing in the 11-pound as well.
It just cuts straight through the water, though, doesn't it? So, you know, when, like, have you ever had lines where you try and tighten it up and the wind is like pulling, almost moving the lead?
Surface film when it won't get through.
Yeah, doing the line just won't cut through the water, and you're worried it's even moving your lead. You cast out and you're trying to sink your line, and you can feel it pulling it out of your hand.
I use an old matchman's tactic when I used to waggler fish. You know, you'd cast your waggler to the far bank on the canal zone there for your chub, and you'd need to sink your line. And the trick was to get a weak solution of washing up liquid, squirt that on your spools. I've done that with my big pit spools, and it just takes it straight through the surface film.
Yeah, well, the P line cuts through nicely. You know, it sinks really easily. You've got none of that. You know, when you sat there for half an hour, you'd say you've got a bit of a side wind and there's a big bow in the line. Some lines you can sit there for ages, like, you know, trying to tighten the line for it to sink and eventually come round. And the P line does not seem to take long.
Yeah, I must also point out that neither of us have any connection to P-Line other than thinking that it's the nuts. We're not sponsored.
No, we can't even buy it. <You know? laughs> I've got one spool of 14. I use the 14 for the long-range stuff. The 14's about 0.28, and it's still pretty tough. And then I use the 17 for my all-round fishing. I can cast 130 yards with a 4-ounce lead, 3.5 test curve rod. I can cast 130 without a leader, without worrying that I'm winding it up too much. It just flies out, you know.
And you still cast like that with your duff shoulder?
Yeah, my shoulder's, it aches. I can't sleep on it, but I've got 100% movement in it. I just can't do press-ups. hence my PB weight at the minute. I didn't weigh myself, but my previous PB when I noticed I was fat was 14 stone, and I'm definitely bigger than that now.
Oh, 14 stone, that's like my leg.
You were 12, yeah. Last time you were 14 stone.
Yeah. Mine, I'm not doing bad at the minute. I think I'm around 17 and a half-ish. I have been over 20. I've been a 20. A scraper 20, mind.
shall we... I was going to say we go on the net, but you haven't actually told us what you've caught this week. And I know you've made a carp cast YouTube video, and you've had a few fish, haven't you?
I've had 5 in total. That's over 2 sessions. But the first one, I had 3 from the spot I've just mentioned, all doing that mission, walking round. And, you know, it was quite pleasing. It was my first time back on the lake for, you know, 3 or 4 weeks. You know, I've been a bit stranded with a turbo blowing up on the car, thanks to the carp gods. So they must have felt sorry for me on my return. And it's nice to catch, get a result when you've been out of touch with a place. Although, to be honest, the way the lake is at the minute, a lot of the fish, they're in, I say one half, it's almost 200 acres. But the shallows, they always do daytime fish. They're never far away. And the way the sailing club, well, you'll see if you watch the video when we put it up, I've got a little underwater shot of my GoPro of a common returning. The water is kind of like a greeny colour. The sailing club have put some mad dye in the lake just to stop the sunlight getting down and kill all the Canadian weed, and it has been very successful. So the eelgrass, which grows on the shallower bars, that's come up with a vengeance. And guess what? That's where the fish are.
Yeah.
Find that, fish in that, and you will catch. Even had my first session back. I've just been back, had two nights this last week. I started off in the same swim after the weatherman forecast a bit of nice weather. He lied. The weather was crap, drizzly, and basically the fish just didn't get up there. So I moved, did my second night in a swim, maybe about 150, 200 yards further along the same bank. But running along from there is, it's a pretty monstrous bar. You know, it runs a good couple hundred yards. You can get, you know, well into double figures either side of it. In the swim I was in, I got about 8.5 in front of me. But with a small breeze, the weed was actually hitting the surface. You could create a small flat, well, a bit of a flat spot on there. And you could see it there. So I fished as close up to it as I dare, which was still around, I'm going to guess, 100 yards, maybe a touch more. Well, I'm feeling it now after casting and spomming it up there because my shoulder's knackered. But I've got two commons. That was a 21 and a 19. And they both weeded me up at long range. That's one thing we use in P-line and no stretch. You were straight on it and you could feel everything. But they both came out. Just steady pressure. They both came in. Fought all the way. They were, I think they were just angry males after spawning. Lovely, like golden commons and all, with like black heads, black fins.
Yeah, I saw the pictures, they look good.
Yeah, no, I put one on the carp cast cage of one that just didn't want its picture taken at all. It wasn't happy. I was doing a spot of carp juggling, which we all do, to be honest.
Yep, and your videos, you're doing a carp cast YouTube channel now, just like an on the bank type thing, aren't you?
Yeah, well, I think we're both going to do it when we can. And it's not a professional thing. We're not going to get any Urban Banks or Mark Pictures Challenge sort of production. But we will do our best. And like I say, we catch fish before filming it.
Yeah, and going back to my session, we periscoped little Benjamin Spenny's son. We periscoped to him with sod's law as soon as we got the video on him. He lost the first one. And then we periscoped him landing a fish. So if you haven't yet followed me on Twitter, if you search Jamie Klosick or at Dustitute, you'll find my Twitter account and also the Carpcast account, which is at the Carpcast.
It is.
You'll automatically, if you download the Periscope app, you'll automatically get a little whistle when one of us streams live. And we spoke about this. Was it the first or the second ever show live streaming from the bank? Sort of half jokingly saying, you know, this is something that'll happen in future. Maybe webcams in trees and that on your favourite lake and connected to the Wi-Fi. And, you know, you can actually... It's an idea. I mean, if I owned a lake that was, you know, a prominent lake, let's take a lake like Orchid, where, you know, the owner lives on site. It's a well-known lake with some worthy fish in it, lots and lots of 30s. How much do you think it'd cost to have a wireless webcam in every peg watching the water? You know, not looking on the peg, intruding on privacy, but actually mounted in a tree in the peg, up high, looking out onto that swim. So if you were going to go and fish that lake next week, you've got 48 hours booked, and maybe you've booked a particular peg or you fancy it, you can be watching the water for a week before you get there, you know. And on a lake where it's, you know, a day ticket lake where there's, you know, a clubhouse or electricity, water and stuff on site, you already got that facilities. I mean, I don't think it'd be that hard to do. or ridiculously expensive, and you're just streaming. So you can have a website, you click on which webcam, you know, peg one, peg two, peg three, and you can watch the water for a bit, or if your mate's on there and, you know, he's asleep in the morning, you can be up at first light watching the peg through. You're like, hey, I've been nutting all over you, you swim waster.
You know what, I think that's going to happen now, because we mentioned the live streaming from swims semi-joking, like you said, and now it's happening. We foresee the future.
It is true. You know, the Periscope's great because you're in the moment. Like, you know, they're only short. Well, it can be as long as you want. It just live streams. You can stream for 5-10 minutes. You know, imagine that. As we said before, somebody's periscoping the British record live on the bank as it's happening. I mean, you just stop your day at work for a minute just to watch that, wouldn't you?
I don't need much persuasion to stop me day at work.
No. But yeah, follow us on Twitter, Carpcast, and at Dustitute, or just search Jamie Klosick, and you'll just download the Periscope app for your phone. It's great fun. You know, I've got friends that are just periscoping, you know, in the pub, and it's literally just them slurping the first pint down, or, you know, later on that night when the band comes on, if they're watching a band or something, it's just like, you know, ABBA tribute coming on now, bump, and it's just another avenue of social media, but it's a good one, I think. It's kind of the next level Snapchat.
Or new media, as it's a little collection of things are being called.
Is that what they're calling it?
Yeah.
Go on then. I was going to move on the net, but if you've got something else to say, get it out.
Yeah, I will get it out. And I will say what I was going to say. But you just made me think what you mentioned about young lad losing his fish. One thing that has pleased me, I've so far, fishing Icom, I've hooked 6 fish and I have landed 6 fish, which our listeners' questions we've got on rigs, we haven't got any actual ones on the hooks, but I'm told, but I think I'm going to give my opinion anyway, because my opinion on hooks and the patterns, what work, seem to differ to the norm. But we'll get to that in the questions, I think. So
yeah, we'll do that in a bit. The good thing about the Periscope, obviously, people are watching Benjamin live playing the fish, and you know, there was loads of like words of encouragement. Come on, you can do it. And I know, young James Bushnell, you know, does the
Bushnell Carp Diaries. Worth a look.
Yeah, they are worth a look. Do check that out. He was watching live every time on the fish, you know, and sending encouraging messages and loads of hearts. And it's good because you can go back and see who watched it and who replayed it. And, it's a great bit of instant media. And we like stuff instant now, don't we? We don't want to wait for things like...
Oh, no. Are those videos still available on your Periscope?
I think it stores the latest one. I'm sure it only stores the most recent. I mean, once you've finished videoing, you can click save to phone, and you can save it on your own phone for uploading later or anything like that. But the Periscope app, it only shows your latest video, because it's meant to be kind of regular, as opposed to just knocking a video out like YouTube and it's up there forever. This is very instant. So
one at a time.
Yeah, it's good. So on the net, it must be true.
It's on the net. It must be true.
Something, a bit of a warning for kids and the parents of kids as the school holidays are coming. There's a few pictures on Facebook appeared of young kids and giant hogweed, which just looks like that kind of flowery weed that you see a lot on the Sneaky Lake that I'd done a bit on last year. It's got lots of this kind of head height, this stuff, and I was breaking it all the time, and I didn't really think anything of it, but kids obviously playing with stuff. Apparently the sap inside is burning, like really seriously burning skin. There's a picture of Lauren Fuller that's been in all the press this week. I've seen it on Facebook loads of times, being shared by different angling groups, and the blisters on her hands are like nothing I've ever seen before. Really serious burns and blisters the size of golf balls, and really horrible pus looking goo things. It is a warning, and I've not really heard of it previously. I didn't know this giant hogweed does this, and I've come into contact with it lots of times.
No, I've not taken much notice of it before, but I'm looking at that pictures of poor young Lauren now, and I certainly will in the future. It says, well, it's on the Daily Telegraph page. The headline is, Girl 10 suffers third-degree burns after picking up giant hogweed. It says she might need skin grafts.
Yeah, it's really bad. So, you know, if your parents have young kids, be careful about the weed that they're playing with. And it does just look like, I've seen it loads of times, this stuff. And like I say, there's some sort of 6-7 foot stuff on that lake I'd been fishing, and I was just breaking it down, moving it out of the way. But apparently it's the sap inside, so I think you've kind of got to snap it open and get the sap on you for it to burn you. But it's certainly worth being careful.
It's on the net. It must be true.
Crowe's got engaged. Simon Crowe, who's on the Carpcast, has recently got engaged to his better half.
Yeah, Lucy, I believe she's called. So congrats to you both.
Yeah, congratulations from me too. It's been a bit quiet on the net this week. There's not been any juicy gossip to talk about, I don't think, that I've seen.
No, I have not. There's plenty of captures and match results rolling through, but obviously we can't go through them all, otherwise the Carpcast would be 8 hours long and bore the pants off you all.
Yeah, definitely. It probably bores people anyway. And does. 3 hours, so. Yeah, but we do have plenty of listeners' questions. You put a request specifically relating to rigs, didn't you?
I did. So, shall we crack on, listeners' questions?
Ask us a question.
Right. The first one, well, it's more of a statement from Tim Lannan. He says, well, you guys are both so experienced. If you just share that and give your opinions, I'm sure the noddies like me will be very happy with that.
Opinions on what? Rigs.
Rigs, yeah. Well, firstly...
First of all, experience doesn't mean good.
No. And you say noddies like you might know more than us.
That's very true. We are all noddies, and I've fished like a noddy all year. The first time I actually felt like I tried was this week just gone, and I caught 4 pounders. So it was good. But, yeah, I mean, I know we spoke with Nashi about rigs when he was on episode one, and he's quite big. My thoughts on rigs are very similar to his. His kind of all-purpose rig is identical to mine, or mine's identical to his. Didn't specifically copy, it's just what's worked best for me over the years, although I did catch a lot of my fish on pop-ups last week, and I've kind of caught less fish on pop-ups throughout my career. I've had more on balance baits on the bottom. I mean, for me, if I had to say one thing about rigs, it would be fish a critically balanced bait, get it sinking as slow as possible. I've had all my best captures on that. So it's kind of sitting on the deck, but it's very light. And I know all the people that just don't like that because, you know, obviously fish move through the swim. It's moving about really easily and stuff. But stuff moves about anyway. Bottom bait's going to move about when a fish, you know, flaps its fins across it. So,
yeah, I think what Tim's getting at is, well, the reason why I put the question up, we can talk about rigs and it would take us about 5 minutes because we both like it simple, but different people have different situations. And let's be honest, rigs, if you're just getting into carp fishing, is an absolute minefield. So, you know, if we can help simplify it for people, then let's do our best. So,
I used to spend nights and nights, you know, when I was like a hardcore geeky carp angler, I would spend way more time than I should have done just thinking about trying to come up with something new and, you know, being really tricky. And I still think creating a feeding situation is way more important than a rig, you know, and whether that's naturally because the conditions are ace, you know, and the fishers want to get caught. But going back to what we said, we were not catching any fish on the standard rods in the daytime, fishing the normal, you know, carp tactics, balance baits, you know, a stick mix. We weren't catching. We went to light line, 2 bits of corn and a method feeder, and we were catching. So we're definitely not always fishing optimally, I don't think.
No, without a doubt. So shall we move on to the next question?
Yep.
So Matthew Hodge says, the lake I fish is covered in kumtail weed, and it seems impossible to find a clear patch. Other than the chod rig, can you guys advise a rig or any tips to actually fish directly on the weed? Thanks.
Ask us a question.
If I go first, he's sent a picture of you. Sent a picture of this.
I googled it. I googled it to see if there was actually a weed called coontail weed, or he's just trying to get us to say naughty words on the podcast.
Well, I've never heard of it, but I do recognise it. It's that flowery stuff, isn't it? All green, not actual flowers, but it's kind of... how would you describe it?
A pain in the ass. I have come across it before myself.
Yeah, it's pretty tough, isn't it, normally as well?
When you hook a fish and it does get in that, it's not fun.
How high does it grow, that stuff?
I think it does go quite high.
Yeah, if it's the stuff I'm thinking, they had it on Stone Acres, you'd see it from the boats. Firstly, the impossible to find a clear patch. I've fished lots of lakes that is absolutely choked, absolutely solid. Then I've gone out in a boat and there are spots. So I would have to go out in a boat and check to believe you that there isn't a clear patch there, because I think there probably is. It's just going to be extremely hard to find it if it's absolutely choked. Sometimes once you go out into the lake, into the deeper water, I mean, how we used to fish Elstow too was, you know, you'd go past the weed. As soon as you got into water that was deep enough, you were kind of over it. But if he's not got a very deep lake, then that might not be the case. It might just be all the way out. I would still be looking for clear patches.
Yeah, it's also he's got to find a clear patch within a sensible distance from the bank. Because if he can't use a boat, which we'll assume you can't, then you can only fish where you can safely land the fish from.
Yeah, of course. I mean, an obvious way is to fish something popped up over the depth of the weed. So, you know, like almost like a zig, but you've got the hook bait set to the depth of the weed. It doesn't really matter about using like lighter zig line. I'd be using a 15-pound hook link for that, you know, like a nylon hook link. I mean, a rig that I think is better than a chod rig in all circumstances is your hinge stiff link that's got a supple boom on it. So, you know, like the old Terry Hearn style hinge stiffy.
Like a reverse combi sort of affair.
Yeah, just a straight up hinge stiff link. Like if you make the hook link bit that goes on your chod with the ring swivel, and then just instead of putting it on a chod, sliding up and down a chod, you just tie like a 10-inch. You can use braid, coated braid. There's all sorts of stuff. I actually saw some stuff the other day. Dave had it. I've never seen it before. I forget who makes it now. Rigmarole, I think. But it's like a fluorocarbon coated in a braid. So you can have it stiff all the way through and it looks like braid, but obviously it's heavy because it's got a fluorocarbon in it. Or you can strip some of the fluorocarbon back to make like a supple bit. You can basically do everything, you know, like your hinge stiff links and stuff. You can actually do that without having a swivel halfway down, and you can just break the fluorocarbon like 2 inches away from the hook. Obviously you strip some of the fluorocarbon back and just tie the hook on with the braid and have your hair. It's so flexible, like you can do loads of stuff with it.
Is it called Hydralink?
I think it is, yeah. Dave showed it me the other day. I really like the look of it, actually. I'm gonna get some, I think. Because it looked, you know, like you could do pretty much any type of rig with it. Like that, how I used to do it was to have the hinge stiff link, you know, on a ring swivel, and then just tie like a boom. I'd obviously use a long boom if the weed's deep, and that just seems to be presented nicely wherever it lands. I'd obviously foam the hook to protect the hook point as it lands, but if you're determined to fish on the weed, that's probably the rig I'd be using rather than the chod rig. It just seems to look better I got that from, who was it used to fish on Stonies with the boat, does a long range casting, Fox guy, makes video blogs, very good angler.
Kneebone.
Kneecap, yeah. Sean Kneebone. I remember reading an article from him about Stonies, and, you know, they were long chucking. But back then, you weren't allowed to drop rigs from boats. You had to find the spot in the boat and then cast to it. So, excuse my phone ringing. So, he would, you had to drop a marker out there, go back, cast, and then go back out to collect your marker, and you can check your rig while you're doing it. And while he was doing that a lot, he was checking his rig, and the chod rigs were not always landing right. They were always landing a bit funny, and he went on to that kind of hinge stiff rig at range, and he said it was always laying perfectly, whether it was in weed or wherever it was always bang on. And I've done that ever since. I just use a longish, suppleish hook link. I use my coated braid, then just strip a little bit back before the ring swivel, and then use the pop-up. Just protect the hook with some dissolving foam.
Yeah, that reminds me, have you seen, I forgot what it's called, but a book that Dr. Paul Garner wrote recently? I was flicking through it at your show, I don't know if it was last year or year before. And he had a picture of this chod rig, and it was only a couple of bits of weed, and it was sitting so far up, it just looked horrible. Pretty much like you just described.
Yeah. Paul's done some ace underwater stuff. He's done slideshows at our show, and he's an extremely intelligent thinking angler, and you know, he doesn't fish for carp, he's a lure angler, he fishes for everything, doesn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Good all-round angler, but he knows a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I think we could pick his brains as a guest one day, don't you?
It's a good shout, actually. He does know lots about carp fishing, so yeah, he'd make a decent guest. Talking of guests, we hope to have Johnny Mack on the show in a bit. I know he's been busy all day making bait for his new bait company, but he says he's going to give us a call in a bit, and we will try and get an interview with him. Had Daryl Peck confirmed today as well. He will be on the show in the near future, maybe the next edition. It's somebody we've been looking forward to getting on with, somebody I fished with quite a bit back in the day. But yep, yeah, next question. I think I'd find a clear spot. There probably is one there. Persevere, and that's the rig I would use over it.
Yeah, and the other thing, make your own clear spot. Get the rake out.
Yeah, if you can do that. Yeah, if you can do that. Although that weed looks very tough. But yeah, rake in the spot if you can do it. You can wade to the, depends on your margins and stuff, but you can wade a decent distance and then, you know, tie a rake onto the end of some rope and throw it that bit further, another 10 yards. So a little bit of effort, but that is certainly what I would do, create my own spot. I mean, back in the day, some of the skullduggery that's been done, you know, been out in boats, dropping tarpaulin, weighted in each corner and making your own spots. I remember Roger on Dead Man's many, many years ago, and that was very weedy. I think they used, you know, that corrugated, like fence paneling stuff, that plastic sheeting you used to get.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, they dropped some of that in and weighted it down. But it's surprising how quick that stuff grows over. Like, even when you know exactly where you put it, it was gone a few years later.
Just grown over. Natural succession.
I think that's been done a few times on the sly on lakes, you know, making your own kind of clear spot over the weed.
You know, I hope someone corrects me if I'm wrong on this one, but I'm sure, is it Darren from Big Lake or Tip Lake? There's a swim called the Mortuary Table, because an old mortuary table, the slab that the corpses were put on, was actually put in the lake to create a clear spot for that same reason.
Yep, yeah.
That story does ring a bell. I'm hoping someone will confirm or correct us on that one.
Yep, so moving on.
Yeah, the next one, Gary Turrell. The lake I fish, like many, is overfished with every rig you could think of. I want to try something the fish have never seen, or at least are not used to. Any suggestions?
Ask us a question.
Go on.
What do you reckon? Right, I'll tell you what, I'm going to skip down, because I'm going to tie this in with another question that's also down there when I find it. Here we go. James Noel says, can you give an example of a time when a change of rig resulted in a bite that you don't think you have had, you don't think you would have had if you hadn't made the change?
Yeah, lots of times.
Yeah. I'm going to bring back an experience I had on St. Ives Shallow Lagoon quite a few years back. 48-hour session. It's the last morning. I've fished two nights. I'm on fish. They've been boshing. They've been bubbling. They've fizzed. I've had liners, and I've not had a bite. Just using my usual bog-standard rigs. Nothing had happened, so I've got literally 3 hours left. I think, oh, I'm going to change something. I had some trigger link in my box that I'd, some rigs I'd tied up and just not used. Mainly just no confidence in it. It looks horrible. It's a pig to tie up. And I thought, I've got nothing to lose. So I wound in, baited them up. I put it on all three rods and just slung it out. And if you're not familiar with your trigger link, it's stretchy. Once you make it wet, it's got something weaved into the braid. It contracts and it gives the fish that something that they're not used to. They just, it stretches. It's like a spring. So I took those three rigs out, and cut a long story short, had a 19 common, lost one, and then a 33 miracord Laney's.
Yeah, there's loads of stuff that you can change. I mean, elasticy type rigs. Nash did that triggerling, didn't he? Obviously, it does
still
the job.
Do.
But I know back in the day, used to use pole elastic, you know, the strong pole elastic, and make a little stretchy boom section. I remember seeing, who was it who used to fish Stoney's, not Stoney's, Christchurch on the Zigs in the winter? Was it Jack Brown, one of the young lads from Nash? Yeah, it was Jack. And he was watching from a tree the fish taking his Zigs, and they were getting away with it. They were swimming off with it in the mouth, and it was just pinging out the side of the mouth, and he got round it by making an elasticated boom, like a couple of inch boom out of elastic, and they're threading it inside some pole elastic. Oh no, that's right, he was tying a little boom section of line but poking it up inside some just normal rubber tubing, sort of stuff you put down the back of your hook and stuff. He was just making like a 2-inch section of that rubber, which is obviously a little bit stretchy, and poking the slack bit of line inside it. So obviously once you'd had the bite and you'd hooked the fish, the tubing would just pull off and you'd just have the normal line under tension. But it was just making a 2-3-inch buffer. And I think we used to call them confidence rigs back in the day.
Yeah, I remember those.
Yeah, everybody used to write about them in magazines. I mean,
not a term I've heard for a long time, that.
No, confidence rigs. So basically, the carp doesn't think it's hooked when it's hooked. So one of the early confidence rigs was you basically had two rigs. So you would have a rig coming off your swivel where your lead is. You'd have a rig coming off the swivel that only had a split ring on the end of it. And then you'd have your rig that's got the hook on it exactly the same length that you'd thread. You'd put the tag end, you'd have your hook and hair rig and everything on the one end. On the other end, you'd put it through the ring, and then you would put another split ring on the end of that bit. So you've now got a rig that's sliding up and down the other rig. So you would PVA the split ring that's on the end of your hook section. You'd PVA that to the swivel that's where your lead is. So both sections are running up alongside each other. But obviously once the PVA melts and the fish sucks it in, it just slides down the rig. I don't know if I'm describing this very well. I can picture it in my head. I've not seen it for years. I'll try and find a picture of it and bang it on our Facebook page. But yeah,
that'd be the best.
It was called a confidence rig. So if you imagine 2 6-inch hook links, your first one that's tied to your lead, the lead end, you know, your clip or whatever you're using, the first one's only got it's a 6-inch rig and it's only got a split ring on the end of it. And then you've got another 6-inch rig with your hook on one end and your hair rig and everything on the other end, a split ring. But before you put the split ring on, you've threaded it through the split ring and the one that's connected to your hook. PVA it up so they're the same length, your hooks. You know, so it's a 6-inch hook link, but it's just doubled alongside each other. And then, obviously, once the thing's melted, when it's sucked in, it's got 6 inches to move before anything tightens up. I used it back in the day. I mean, back in the day, they used to say that you only used it when you were struggling for bites, because if you used a confidence rig all the time, the fish would get used to it. You wouldn't catch as much. You know, where'd you go from a confidence rig once they've got used to the confidence rig? What's the next stage?
I'm going to go off on a tangent here. I think a change of bait might be more of a change of rig, and I'm just thinking back to, well, you'll be able to tell us more about, like, say, Yeatley Car Park Lake, how it went in cycles, and then the first person onto the new cycle, like 20 mil hook baits, raped it.
I think a change is good. It doesn't just have to be bait. I think it's doing something different if the fish are pressured. If everyone on the lake's using 6-inch hook link, use a 2-foot hook link. That was something Gary Bays taught me. Bayesy uses 2-foot hook links for no other reason than nobody else does. Like that's his thinking. And he catches obviously a lot of fish. He's a prolific angler.
Yeah, or you could start method match fishing style.
Yep. I know when I fished like stiff link pop up stoke, you know, the Terry Hearn style stiff link and chod rigs. I know when I've had them on the spot against a normal rig on the bot, you know, like a balanced snowman-y type rig. I've definitely changed when I've known I've been on fish. I've definitely changed from a chod rig or a stiff link to a bottom bait rig and caught, or a bottom bait stroke balanced rig, you know. I definitely believe you catch more fish, you will get a take quicker. I'm not saying the chod rig won't go eventually, but when I've been baiting one spot and I've just been messing about with rigs, I've had them both on the same spot, it's been like 5-1 the balance bait against the stiff link, and I've tested it loads of times on different lakes that so sometimes, you know, if you're using a pop-up, change to a bottom bait rig if you're not catching you think you should be, you know, if you've got fish in the swim, etc. Can you think of any other examples? I mean, lengthening the hook link, shortening the hook link, and lightening it. What we said at the start of the show about the method feeder, I mean, I'm sure some of that, the reason why we're picking them up in the daytime is because it was, you know, like a size 12 hooked and nylon we were using on it. You know, it was a light hook link and a light bait, and the cart rigs weren't doing bites in the daytime, and that rig was catching the same fish. So certainly lightening everything up will make a difference. You know, slightly finer hook, maybe slightly smaller. People do it in winter because the water's clearer, but I think it might be an idea to do it in the daytimes.
Yeah, without a doubt. I noticed it a few years back when I returned to St. Ives Shallow Lagoon. It's when Nash brought out the black squid.
Yeah,
I was using that as a hook bait. It's certainly got more daytime bites.
Yeah, that's worth thinking about. Obviously, changing the colour of hook baits. I mean, why wouldn't you on a... We're very used to buying... Maybe it's the cost of stuff, but you spend 12, 14, 15 quid on a spool of hook link materials, generally either £15 or £25. We buy that and we use it all year. Now, as an argument for why wouldn't you use the lightest possible hook link you can get away with? If you're fishing a lake and you're fishing for mid-doubles and there's no snags, you know, why would you not be using an £8 nylon hook link? I'm sure, 100% sure, that will catch you more fish on a regular basis. And I don't do it, you know, I have my 15 and 25 pound hook links and I use it for everything. I mean, the difference in diameter between the 15 and 25 is negligible anyway, so I use the 25 most of the time. But dropping down to like a £10 Maxima hook link and a smaller hook, it has to catch you more fish. It does in match fishing. You know, if we were float fishing back in the day and, like, you're not catching one day, if you just make the hook link slightly lighter, you know, use a finer hook link, all of a sudden you start getting bites. And that's super common. So why wouldn't it be the same with carp? I did it last week on the Nod Lake without trying to do it. You know, we just, you know, wanted to get some bites with a little lad, and we were, you know, fishing for the bream and everything. And so we banged the method feeder out and, you know, we kept catching the carp.
Yeah, so, in conclusion, there's so many different things, just little tweaks here and there. Be different from the norm.
Certainly. Top three favourite rigs we've kind of covered. I mean, I've covered the rigs that I use in weed. I've generally used the stiff links. This is Andry Rosian.
Ask us a question.
Your favourite top three rigs. My favourite rig is just a blowback rig on a twister hook, 7-8 inches long. A little bit of, you know, tubing on the back of the hook and a snowman bait. That catches me 90% of my fish. I've already described the rig that I prefer to use in weed. And I'll use adaptations of those rigs dependent. If the weed's longer, I'll use a longer hook link. If I'm fishing in silt, I'll use a longer hook link. If I think the fish are feeding really tight to the bottom in shoals, in groups, I'll have a really short hook link. you know, if I'm fishing over heavy bait or over particle and stuff, I'll have a 3-4 inch hook link. Yeah, that's what I did on Elstow 1, and caught really well on extremely short hook links, literally 3-inch, 4-inch hook links.
And that is a lake where they've seen everything.
Yeah, certainly, certainly. I know Roger Bacon, he's been using a rig that's been particularly successful for him over the last few years. I'm not going to go into too much detail because I don't think he wants it out. It's not like super groundbreaking, you know, it's not like nothing you've ever seen before, but it's just something he's done slightly differently to an existing type of pop-up rig. That's as much as I'm going to say, but I know him and Jason have been using it for a good few years, and there are things you can do with existing rigs without going like super crazy. You know, Martin Clark's Scorpion rig and stuff in his first boat was, I just, you know, I still...
Did you ever try tying one of those up?
Yeah, I did, yeah. I doubt he's ever used that. I don't know. I mean, Martin's a good guy.
Unless you whip that together with PVA and drop it in by hand and place it, that rig ain't doing anything.
Exactly. So it's a funny one. I mean, I don't think you need to reinvent the wheel, but I think you just need to adapt rigs to a specific situation.
Well, I'll go for my three favourites. Is pretty similar to you, the balanced bottom bait. The only different thing I'll do is when I put a little bit of tubing over the eye, instead of using a liner, I'll cut the end of it at a 45 degree angle, and that flips it as good. And that's about as technical as I get with that one. My number... Well, no particular order with these. Number two rig, I'll just say a controller and a surface rig, because I like surface fishing and it's fun. And I can't think of any bottom rigs. But I'll go top one. Is the one I've caught all my Icon carp on, is the multi-rig.
Is it multi-rig like the John Matt rig, where you can change the hook?
That's the one. And I'm not... Mainly because I'm tight and you don't have to tie a new one up each time, you just change the hook.
Yeah, that is a great rig. I mean, obviously Julian Cundiff, he's known for using it a lot. We used to call it Johnny Matt rig. He showed it me on Yately like 12, 13 years ago, and I know people were using it before then. It is a good rig because it acts as a pop-up rig. It acts kind of similar to a hinge stiff link. Well, it performs similar to the rig we were talking about with the supple boom. And a stiff hook bit.
Yeah, what I like about the multi-rig is you can get the pop-up really, really low.
Yeah, if I use pop-ups, I generally want them as low as I can.
Yeah, that's how I've been doing it. And basically, just fishing, not quite white, but a pale washed-out coloured pop-up over my usual bed baits, and it's working for me. But this is what I alluded to at the beginning of this, was my preferred pattern of hook. Straight hook points all the way.
Yeah, I'm the same with straight hook points. They go over easier on, you know, if you're fishing gravel pits and rocks, but without doubt, straight point.
Yeah, I'll tell you the reason, because I did a few experiments a while back between straight hook points. I believe it is a complete myth that hooked with big points give you a better hook hold. I think that's rubbish. Now, I'm not going to knock everyone, because everyone's got their own preference. And my own PB was caught on a hook with a big point. It was nailed an inch back. But it's not your fish, you're nailing an inch back. It's your fish where you prick them on the edge of the lip. Imagine your hook pricks on the edge. It turns over at an angle. Fish shakes its head. And as the hook goes in with a straight point, it's going to follow that trajectory of the straight point in, go in a straight line and go deeper. You've got a hook with a beat point, it's going to go in, but it's going to go into the curve. It's heading back out as it goes in. And the more beat your hook, the shallower your hook holds, and the more chance of a hook pull. And the fact that I honestly can't remember the last time I had a hook pull in open water says I might be onto something.
Yeah, I don't lose many fish. You know, as a rule, once I hook them, they're normally coming in the net. So, Jack Martin Daniels, do you think the palm test is bullshit?
Ask us a question.
Yes and no.
I was going to say exactly the same thing. Yes, yes and no.
For me, depends on your hook link material. If our bottom rings we've described, it's not bullshit, no way. that shows you flips. Whereas for chod rigs, you know, hinge stiff rigs, yes, it is. Basically.
Yeah, my thinking of it is a little bit more technical. I've done lots and lots of palm tests with different rigs. The palm test, it can't ever hurt your rig if the hook turns. Yeah, for those who that don't know, we may have some beginners and stuff. The palm test is if you like hold your hand flat, like parallel to the floor, and you put the hook and the bait on top of it, and then you pull the rig down. They use it to see how well your hook turns, i.e. turns round and grabs onto your hand at any point. So you can put your palm flat and pull it along sideways, and good rigs will grab it straight away. If you imagine a fish's mouth when it's like tipped up feeding, you want the hook to grab wherever it touches, really. That's like your primary thing, you know, wherever that point touches the mouth on the inside, you want it to stick in. The problem with the palm test is when a fish has sucked a boilie up, the boilie's in midair, like, and the hook's hanging below it. It's never in a situation where the boilie is flat on the bottom of the lip, which is if you put the rig on your palm, the actual depth of the boilie is holding the hook up and helping it grab. So it's kind of not realistic. The only time it is realistic, if you imagine putting the hook and the rig like on the edge of your hand, like on your palm, but like right near the edge. And then, so if you imagine that edge of the hand is the lip of a carp, when you pull the rig downwards, when you pull the end of the hook link downwards, I think that is probably quite realistic to a fish that's lifting its head up, like tightening the hook link up to the lead. So when a fish has sucked your bait in and it lifts its head up, that's when I think the palm test is relevant. Like if your hook's turning nicely there, but I mean, I want it to have already hooked while it's inside the mouth. If you're relying on it hooking once it tightens up to the lead, then you're missing an earlier opportunity to hook it, which is the reason why I don't like beat points, because it's much harder for a beat point to catch on the inside of the mouth. I do think they'll grip extremely well when a fish lifts its head. So there's two kind of ways. I mean, what you're going on about, like stiff links and stuff and chod rigs, you know, they're kind of, they work on the principle that the fish can't actually spit it out, you know, once it's in, the stiff bit of the hook section is keeping it in. So the fish, like, either has to reverse, which, you know, carp can do, but they don't. That I'm sure they can learn to reverse. If everybody on the lake used that type of rig, they would certainly learn to suck it in, realise there's something wrong, and back off it. But generally, once it's in their mouth, they go, shit, I can't get rid of this. I've tried blowing it. It's not going anywhere because it's stiff, so I'm just going to move. And when it moves, it obviously grabs them. So I have done palm tests, and I do like my hook to turn for that reason. When the fish moves off, I want it to be really aggressively flipping round and grabbing the lip as the fish tightens up to the hook link. But I also want to make sure my rig has a chance of snatching the inside of the mouth before the fish moves off. That's kind of my thinking of it. You similar? Yeah. Well, you've kind of done your palm test views, haven't you?
Yeah, pretty much. And yeah, I can't argue with anything you said. It's my own thinking. I just simplify it.
Kevin Brown says, your views on hook sharpness, and do you guys sharpen hooks?
Ask us a question.
Yes, and my views are the sharper it is, the easier it's going to grab the inside of the mouth. You know, I want it to, you must have done it yourself when you get a super, super sharp pack of hooks. And if you put a rig on it, and it just nicks your finger when you've got a mega sharp hook, you try shaking the boilie off, like just nick your finger and then shake your hand. What happens with a super sharp hook, it doesn't fall out, it goes in more when you're trying to shake it off. So obviously that's something that you want to happen. If a fish pricks itself and it starts shaking its head trying to get rid of it, you want the hook to just go deeper, which is what it does with a super sharp hook. If it's not as sharp and you nick your hand, you can shake it off. You know, you can give a flick of your wrist and it'll fall out. But you get a mega sharp one, it goes deeper, and the sharper you can get them, the better. And I always have a sharpening stone in the file. And I know when we do finally get Daryl on, Daryl was one of the first people I ever met that was really onto the sharpness of hooks. He was obsessed by it to the point of, with Corder, he would get them to send it. In fact, he worked in a tackle shop at the time. And then I'm sure he spoke about this, and we're not bubbling him up. But I know he used to get all the hooks in the tackle shop. He'd lay them all out on the counter, sort the sharpest ones into 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 packs, however many were, buy them 5 packs, and then put all the other ones back in. Everybody else used
to. I'm getting ideas.
Oh, yeah, you work in the tackle shop. Yeah, he used to, because in every pack, it doesn't matter what the brand is, every pack, there's 2 or 3 that are sharper than all the rest. So he would take them ones out and put them all in one pack. And then obviously everybody started sharpening hooks. And when you sharpen your own hooks, you can get them way sharper than any hooks that you buy if you do it right. And you know, there's been loads written about that. And
yeah, I was on about the writing about it. I remember when Jason Hayward, who I believe is a jeweler by trade, first wrote about his sharpening of hooks using the cut four file. I can't remember exactly what it is.
I remember the article very well.
Yeah, me too. That was like a kind of light bulb flicking on moment, thinking, I need to be doing that.
Yeah. Without doubt, the sharper your hooks, the more fish you're going to catch. That is certain. You know, I believe we get our baits picked up way more than we ever know about. And you know, those little single bleeps, you think, that was odd, it's flat calm. Yeah, it could have been something bumping the line. It also could have been something just nicked itself, shook its head and got off and swam. So, without doubt, the sharper, the better. Should we move on? We've been hours here, so...
Yeah, we are waffling on a bit, and I thought rigs might be a short one because we both like it simple.
Not at all. Adam Wilson.
Adam Wilson. Yeah, this is... do you want to do this one? I'll save it for next time. It's a random one, I'll probably, in case we slowed up.
Adam Wilson from North Carolina asks, can you explain why carp show? What are they doing when a fish crashes the surface?
Ask us a question.
Wow, I've read articles on this. I remember back in when we were talking with Julian about the carp fisher days, there was a lot of talk about this, and there was loads of crazy explanations of why carp bosh. I think it's way simpler than, you know, the reasons people used to come up with. And one, I think they like it sometimes, they're playing. You know, they want a little look. Yeah. They do seem to show when they're feeding, and it's a different type of show. I remember being on Fen Drayton, I think it was, with John Bannister was down there, might have been doing a feature or fishing or something, and he was telling me a story of a guy from a country that eat carp, you know, that it's their main diet. So I forget which Eastern European country it was, but one of them, and he was saying, like, by the way he was watching the carp show, he knew if he was going to eat that night. So basically he's like, they're not feeding, you know, because obviously it was important to them, like, we're just trying to catch them, like, they needed them for food, and they would know if they were going hungry by how the fish was showing. So the carpy style of show, where I know they're feeding, they're having it, you know, when you see the heads just popping out up to the gills, and they're just like maybe going in slightly forward as they go back in the water, but that kind of just head popping up and down, I mean, that is a feeding show. I'm not 100% sure when a fish comes out right up to its tail and goes whack a splash, you know, like that.
How does it go?
I'm not sure they're feeding every time, but I have caught just by chucking at showing fish. But sometimes you can just tell they're not feeding, like it's that high pressure type of showing, you know, where they're launching 3 foot clear of the water. Or have you ever seen them where they kind of tail walk, they like stay out the water for ages, like they're not feeding when they do that. And sometimes where they almost go backwards, you know, like come right up to the tail, do a little tail walk and fall in backwards as opposed to forwards. I don't think they're feeding when they do that. I think they're just like just getting a gasp of oxygen, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, I think, because also I've noticed on deeper waters such as Elstow 1 and 2 and Bundy's, all waters where the carp think the dolphins, Is it? Do you think they're doing some sort of to equalise the swim bladder or something?
It's weird, though, isn't it, when on really deep lakes where they launch clear. I mean, I've had takes in 25, 30 foot where I've seen the fish show, chucked a lead at it, and it's gone. You know, it's ripped off like 10 minutes later.
Yeah, I mentioned it on the chat with Ed. You know, I did it on Bundy's right, in 60 foot.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, they do cover lots of water very quickly. I mean, it's amazing how much water they do cover, you know, in a short space of time.
Yeah. But whatever the reason, I think we should be grateful they do it, because if you're looking for big roach in a massive reservoir, you're pretty well screwed. They don't jump out. Carp do. Thanks, carp.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing better than seeing fish nutting over your spot, you know. But there are different types of shell. Sometimes they do it when they're feeding. And when they're feeding, I assume they're just doing it to clean their gills out from all the crap that they're sucking in while they're feeding. They're sucking in everything off the bottom, and, you know, they have extremely efficient filtering systems where they suck and blow. But I think it's just kind of part of the process, you know, where they like stick the head out, maybe just washing it through. I'm not totally sure, but, you know, I can tell when they're feeding, certainly. You know, there's nothing better than getting them heads popping up right on your spot, and they're just sliding up and sliding back in. You know they're having it. You know they're eating when they're doing that.
Yeah, then you get the couple of bleeps, a liner, then it rips off.
Yeah, definitely.
Magic.
Definitely. So just before we bring in our guest, assuming he makes the phone call later on, just worth a look. Something that's new to the angling scene.
Worth a look.
And we've seen this week, carp in the park. Have you seen this, Mark?
I have, down by Billy Aquadrome, Northamptonshire, which, if you know your carp in history, that has got a lot of it, one of the lakes there. I believe it was Willow Lake, did something like a 42 common in the 60s or 70s.
Yeah, held the British record for a while, Billing Aquadrome, sure it did.
Did it?
Yeah, it was a record fish. Like it kind of precedes the Redmire days, Billing does. There's some really old pictures if you Google it. It's got I stayed on there years ago when we were in the band. We'd done a few gigs there, because there's a holiday park there as well. I presume there still is. Yeah, we'd done a few gigs in the club there many, many years ago, probably 20 years ago. We'd stay on site, and I always looked at the lakes there. I didn't know the history of the carp then. I wish I had known. But I know,
took your rods.
Yeah, definitely. But I know there were rumoured to be big fish, but not many in there back then. I don't think it had been stocked in years, and obviously them old fish from the 60s, I think a lot of them had gone. But yeah, steeped in history, and it's quite a new idea. So it's an idea we had, really, about doing our angling show outside on the bank. A bit like the Cudmore show, I suppose. But this one seems to have a lot of big names on. Dave Lane's there, Adam Penning's there, Chili, Frank Warwick.
Yeah, they're all doing slideshows there. There's all sorts of what I've copied and pasted from their website. We've got Q&A sessions, rig demos, other stuff, and plenty of exhibitors as well.
Yeah, Nash are doing a roadshow there. I know they've been sending emails out. I can't make it this weekend, but I know they've been sending messages out to all the consultants to try and get them there. I presume they're doing live demos and stuff on the lake itself as well, which is good. It must have been stocked these days.
I believe I have been there myself once, again, as a kid on holiday, but I think one of the lakes is attached to the River Neen, which runs alongside of it, so there will be carp in there, no doubt.
Yeah, I guess it's been stocked in recent years, and the boom of carp angling. So interested to see how it goes down, because we've looked at doing a show in one of the big day ticket complexes up north, you know, kind of like a daytime fishing show, but attracted to, you know, people just having a day out as well. You know, I think they've got bands on and stuff.
Yeah, you can bivvy up, stay the night, live music, an outside bar. That'd be dangerous.
I'd be interested to see how it goes, and obviously we wish them well.
Definitely.
It's DHP Publishing and Advanced Carp and stuff that are hosting the show, and, you know, they worked with us at our show over Christmas, so we wish them the best. And if you're anywhere in the area, we recommend going down, checking it out.
Yeah, Saturday the 25th and Sunday the 26th of July.
Yep, bivvy up for the night and get drunk.
And listen to good music.
Cool. Well, while we're waiting for John to get home from his busy day, we'll wrap this up for now, and we'll see you in Carpcast 12.
Yeah, see you there.